Women's liberation was a buzz phrase and a movement decades ago, yet long after those days, we are still talking about gains for women in present or future tense. Yes, for example, General Motors has its first woman CEO, but for about 7 weeks. The United States has not had a woman president yet. This might explain why women still gather for conferences on women leaders, like the Women's Leadership Conference coming to Southern Oregon University this weekend. The conference chair and the keynote speaker join us here today. Jean Stallman is the chair. Jean, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
And Ann Doyle, the keynote speaker, well, she's got a bit of history in a couple of different fields coming out of journalism, TV journalism in the Detroit area, and then moving on to the auto industry. And she now is self-employed and trying to empower other women to move into positions of leadership. Thank you so much for joining us, Ann.
Good morning, Jeff. Happy to be out here in Oregon.
Let's start with you, Jean, about the reasons for, I guess the question comes down to ultimately how much longer will we have women's leadership conferences as women move into positions of leadership and everybody feels comfortable with that?
Great question, Jeff. I would say I've been surprised and overwhelmed by the response to this conference. When we first rolled it out last year, we thought that perhaps we'd have 100 people, and in the first week, we had 150 with a wait list signed up. We ended up running with 220. This year, again, in the first week, we sold all 300 spaces that we managed to increase to. The thirst for this has just been astonishing to me. Why? There's probably, if there's 300 women in the room, 300 different reasons. But there is absolutely a great hunger for it, a great sense of ground to be covered still.
So let's talk about that ground covered with Ann Doyle. Pardon me for pointing. When you look back at the start of your career, did you think women would be as far as they are? Did you think they might be farther along than they are now?
Well, a lot of women of my generation, and I'm part of a generation that I call the pioneering interlopers. We were kind of the Marines taking the professional beaches, you know, back in the early 1970s. And I would say that many of us, when we talk today, shake our heads and say, wow, we really thought we'd be further. We really thought we'd be further. And that's not to minimize how far we've come. I think it's an acknowledgement that culture changes slowly. So we have come a long, long way. But we're this nation of millions of women high achievers, but we're still leadership underachievers.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your own career then, because you've had a knack for being around some firsts. I mean, you came out of a broadcasting
a little bit of Forrest
family.
Gump
yeah.
in me. Yeah.
Yeah. Your dad apparently was the sports director at a radio station in Detroit for many, many years, well-known radio station. You moved into the family business, as it were, to become a TV sports reporter. A woman TV sports reporter, very rare for that time. And then this began to get into the realm of like, well, how am I going to get my post-game interviews? There's a description.
Yeah,
I remember, I heard a description on one of your web videos about how the one of the major executives at the Detroit Tigers took to this.
Oh, yes, Tiger general manager Jim Campbell. And his comment was very similar of what the other general managers and the athletic directors at the major universities was when I was hired by the CBS affiliate to become one of the first women sports broadcasters on TV in the country. That was 1978. And it was basically, great, nice to have you, here's your credentials. And then when I asked about the locker room, it was, over my dead body, you're going in our locker room. And of course, a few months later,
he survived
a lawsuit that was working its way through the courts, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they were told you cannot discriminate. But I will say this. It's one thing for a judge to rule that teams cannot discriminate against women reporters when the male reporters are going in. It's another thing to be a lone female standing outside a sports locker room, practically hyperventilating, trying to force yourself to sort of walk through those doors and face what was on the other side. And my father was an incredible mentor to me through some tough times.
Once in the locker room, I'm going to assume that you probably had to endure at a minimum some fairly nasty wisecracks, if not a lot worse than that. I mean, what was it like once you got in
there? Well, you and my dad was great in this, and I think it's something that I always say to all women leaders or anyone who's sort of moving into new territory, that you're going to be tested. You know, you have to expect to be tested. And then when those tests come, understand what they are and then how you handle them will not only be watched by the person who's testing you, but others who are just observing how you handle it.
So in addition to the tests you got in locker rooms, I mean, I can imagine there might have been some resistance within your own newsroom, too.
Well, the interesting thing is that my father was really one of the deans of the sports broadcasters in Detroit at that time. And I knew when I was offered the job, it could be very controversial, not only for me because of the locker room issue, but for him. And I really didn't want to embarrass my father. But my father said to me, "You take that job." And he backed me 1,000% on the importance of going in the locker room. And it wasn't until years later that I found out that he took a lot of pressure from his male peers. Men who said, other journalists who basically said, you have to stop her because she's going to ruin it for all of us. Because their fear was my gain would be their loss. You know, that the teams would close the locker rooms to everyone instead of letting female reporters have the same access with men. And that's not what happened.
The old she's going to mess this up for all of us
there
attitude.
You go.
Okay.
There you go.
Talk much more about Ann Doyle's career and about issues with women and leadership. Ann Doyle, the keynote speaker at the Women's Leadership Conference at Southern Oregon University this weekend. Jean Stallman is with us as well. She's the conference chair. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from this break. Back with Jean and Ann and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking today about women in positions of leadership on the eve of a women's leadership conference coming to Southern Oregon University this weekend. Jean Stallman, the conference chair, joins us in the studio, along with the keynote speaker, Ann Doyle, broadcast journalist, auto industry exec, author, and now motivational speaker, and so much more. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about women and how we increase the ranks of women in positions of leadership. At 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Jean Stallman, when we got started, you thought, again, that the first time you had the conference last year, it might bring in 100 people. This year, you've had to expand to 300 seats and have filled them all.
With a wait list, yes.
With a wait list, mm-hmm. Really. Okay. And so what's the dynamic here? I mean, did you think last year that, okay, there might not be that much interest in this anymore? Or,
I mean, well, I guess it was certainly uncertain for me. The whole conference got going just because of conversations with other leaders in the community. The idea that, you know, maybe we all should get together got such a positive response, and we just kept talking. I would say one of those conversations was with Karen Blair, a city councilwoman in Medford. We were having coffee, and I said, well, Karen, what's it like to be the only woman on city council? And her response was so visceral and automatic. She said, it is so frustrating. I don't understand why there's always only one woman on city council. Before me, there was one other woman on city council. Then she left and I got elected to office. You know, at each point, it seems like there's only one out of all of the members of city council, one who's female. Why can't we have more?
Well, and you know, I can remember covering the Medford City Council myself back in the 80s and 90s when there were three women on the council. Mm. So in some cases, have we actually slid a bit backwards?
Well, I think the numbers could show different things at different points in time, but I think the point is that we haven't gotten very far, for sure, one way or the other. And that's somewhat hard to understand. As Ann said, we're achieving. Women are achieving. We're successful at work. We're successful at balancing work and family and all that. But why are women not still in the highest positions in numbers even approaching parity? Why are we not serving in elected office at much of a rate? I mean, there are 20 women in the Senate, U.S. Senate. And why are we celebrating that when it's nowhere near even 50? Not that I'm saying we should be 50-50. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, couldn't it be just as likely to be 20-80 as 80-20? You know, that would be more natural.
Anne Doyle, I mean, you had mentioned the fact during the break when we were off the air about running for office yourself at some point. Why do you suppose it is that that women do? I mean, part of the issue with women not getting elected to office is women aren't running for office.
Well, that's exactly right. And we know now that when women do run, they get elected just as equally as men. And often some people think they have an edge, you know, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of trust of women running for office. And the problem is this is cultural. And I like to say that, you know, I mean, think about it. Men have been leading and, you know, in elected office and military generals and business leaders for centuries. And it's really been only in the last 100 years that all of the major gains in terms of women moving into public arenas have occurred. 1920, the right to vote.
Right.
You know, and it's only been about the last 40 years that women have moved into the professions in big numbers. So women, what I say is women, we're taught to wait to be invited.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know what? You have to invite yourself to the leadership dance. Men aren't taught to wait to be invited. Women are taught culturally to do that. But in order to lead, you have to invite yourself to the leadership dance. So the piece that women have to do right now is we need women of courage to stop sitting around and thinking, you know, well, if I get all straight A's and I do a great job, I'm going to get promoted to leadership. No, you have to go forward. And go after it. So it takes women of courage, but the other piece of it is men of high consciousness who understand that women bring true value to decision-making here and also sort of understand that women are a little more reluctant to raise their hand and say, hey, how about me? And so I really welcome, and we need men to say, come on. You run for office and support them.
Jeff, I want to add that this Women's Leadership Conference is not only for women. We have men who have attended as well. There were several men who attended last year. This year we have one male registered, and we're delighted about that because this is a community issue. It's
oh,
not
God,
just
it's a token,
women. Well, we're hoping for a few more. Not this year since we're full, but that's the direction we'd like to go. And in fact, we are getting together with some leaders in the community tonight, predominantly men, to talk about this very issue because it belongs to both of us.
When we talk about women in politics, though, I wonder, Anne Doyle, if part of the issue might be that that women see politics as not a particularly fun place to be, particularly at this point in history. I would presume you live, if not in, but probably close to John Dingell's district in Michigan.
Well, Dingell is a very close personal friend of mine, and
right,
she's
so,
going to run for that seat.
So his wife is going to run for
this
seat.
And she's going to win it, too.
Granted, he's 87, but he's had, he's had enough of...
And his father, yeah, right.
And I wonder how she feels about approaching this this race then. I mean, as a woman...
Oh, she understands very, very well. I mean, Debbie's very seasoned in Washington, D.C., and so she understands very well what politics is all about. And that's the piece of it is that, and there's a great Theodore Roosevelt quote about this, you know, if people sort of shy away from the tough stuff, the more aggressive ones who may not have the values that you do are going to jump in. And so we can't shy away from leadership and how tough politics can get because it's too important in terms of shaping our nation.
Let's talk about your own career then and about shying away from things because it doesn't appear to be a trend. I mean, we talk about being a woman sports reporter for a TV station in 1978, getting access to the locker rooms via lawsuit, and then you ended up in the auto industry. So, I mean, you couldn't have picked two more testosterone-laden industries, could you?
No, I don't think
so. I mean,
so,
short of going into the, short of actually playing baseball or football yourself.
Well, I was a tomboy, most definitely. I'm one of seven children. I have three brothers and three sisters, and I think all of that helps prepare you. But I also had great parents, you know, who told all of us, you know, never eliminate yourself, and a very courageous mother and a father who supported us. And I think that I'm very much a product of the times. And I saw myself, there were tremendous opportunities for women opening up, but my generation of women understood that you had to go after them and you had to fight for them. They weren't going to just come to you. And so it was very much an evolution for me, and I would say that I felt as if my job was always to keep pushing the edges of possibility. And yes, I was ambitious, but I always felt that my job was to open doors for others to come through as well.
Jean Stallman, is that part of the issue then, that women of today may feel, particularly younger women, that a lot of the gains have been made? You know, that yes,
That's
the
exactly
access
right.
is there, whether we
yes.
want it or not.
Yeah, I was just thinking as Anne was talking how similar her story was. to my own and I think to young women today. I was telling Ann yesterday, I graduated college in the mid-'80s, and at that point, just prior to graduation, the university put on a workshop for women. I think actually it was some of our women alumni who had done it. And I remember being astounded by a woman lawyer talking about how, you know, you can't really be a lawyer and work part-time. That just doesn't happen. It's not possible. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. But coming out of college, I was naive enough to think that I could do anything, that the systems would permit me to, if I wanted to be a mother and work part-time, that that was possible. Only later in one's career does one find that although those doors have been opened, there may be some parameters attached to them that you weren't prepared for, you weren't expecting, and that, in fact, the battle is not all won yet.
So when you talk about the parameters, I mean, expectations in a particular job that are beyond what people are willing to deliver? I mean,
well, my own personal story, when I had a child, I thought at first I would work full time because I loved my job. But when I had that baby, I thought, you know, this is so important to me. How do I do this? And I decided I would like to work part time. My boss at the time would have said no, except for another woman, another manager in the office, who said to him, if you don't say yes, if you don't allow her to try this, she'll leave. And so this other woman stood up for me. She told my boss, I was never so effective as when I was focused on work because I knew I needed to get to home too, to feed that baby. So because that woman stood for me, I was given that opportunity. I think so many young women don't realize that we need still to work very much together to continue to open these doors because they're not all there yet.
We are talking about women in leadership on the Jefferson Exchange. Jean Stallman is the chair of the Women's Leadership Conference at Southern Oregon University this weekend. Ann Doyle is the keynote speaker from a career in TV broadcasting and the auto industry and working for herself for quite some time now. Join us on the Exchange. Give us your thoughts on what is holding women back from positions of leadership. If you're a woman, why perhaps you did not seek positions of leadership if they were there for you. Mm-hmm. Our phone number is here on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Jean, you were talking about your own experience with having a baby and trying to divide the time between home and work. It would seem, Ann Doyle, this is still an issue for a lot of women. Men are never expected to be gone from work for from 2 weeks to 8 months. And it seems like the men who stick around work probably get knocked up the line. I probably should not have used that collection of words. Pushed up the line as time goes on because they're there every day when the women will disappear for large periods because they are at home rearing children.
Well, right. And that's the cultural piece that we're still working our way through, because what happened really was when women realized, you know, that they could pursue, that they had the talent and the brain power to do these professional jobs that they're doing now that's so mainstream, there was this idea that you can do whatever your talents and your dreams call to you. But there was also, I think, a lot of women heard the message that when you can do whatever you want, that you can do it all, that you had to also do it all. Instead of have it all, that you had to also do it all. And men have never expected to do it all. You know, men expect to. A successful man expects to have a great career, a wonderful family, happy marriage, you know, all those pieces. But women are still carrying, they're doing three times the child care, and they're doing twice the work at home of men. And so there's a piece
just
here.
Twice.
In some places. Well, I don't know about you and what you do at your house, but but, you know, there's a very important piece. Of course, we're never going to change the fact that women are the ones who bear the babies, you know, and those early important early times, you know, with that child. But I think a greater role for fathers in terms of, and you're seeing this in this next generation of young, of men, you know, the Gen Y men are much more likely to say, well, hang on a second. You know, I'm not going to, like, give it all at the office here because I want to be more involved with my children. I want to be more involved with my life. And that's also going to force companies, organizations to understand the talent pool, not just women but men, is also changing dramatically.
Can I add, I know my own husband has been terribly supportive of me and my work. I think part of our challenge is internally to the cultural adjustment Anne's talked about, to allow and accept that as right instead of feeling like, I need to do the vacuuming, you know, that I'm responsible for this and that, that really this is something that we can both own, our careers together, our situation together. I don't have to be responsible for all the child raising, the cooking, the cleaning, the bill paying, all that kind of stuff, that these are our tasks. And to be really comfortable with that is, I think, a mental challenge for many of us.
There are two sets of expectations that would need to be changed here, it seems, though. I mean, for one, if we're talking about the Generation Y men, that was the example you gave, Anne, who are willing to spend a little more time at home focusing on things, they are likely to get passed in the workplace by the people who don't feel that need to contribute as much as at home. That's one set of expectations to change just among the coworkers. But then also management has to start thinking in terms of like, well, we place a value on people who place a value on their home life as well as what they do here.
Well, yes, but it's also about the talent pool. If you're going to be very selfish as an employer or a large company, you have to look at what the talent pool is. And if you want the best talent, you can't assume that only the best talent are the people who are willing to work the most number of hours at the office. You know, you're going for talent now. And I'll give you a perfect example that we talk a lot about, the fact that more women now are earning college degrees, graduate degrees, even PhDs than men now. But you might not have heard the cumulative number. Since 1982, 10 million more women in the United States have earned college degrees than men. That's our talent pool. And so for this country, and there's a whole other question, I'm the mother of a son, whole other question about what's going on with our young men, which you could have a whole show about that. But we cannot allow that kind of talent pool that we've invested a lot of money in educating to be underutilized. And that's where we are right now.
That's a big disparity. So we're talking
10
million more women over the last...
10 million more since 1982.
All right, 31 years then. So
that's right.
It would seem like by now the executive ranks should be flooded with women.
Well, right. That's my point about there are millions of highly educated, professionally seasoned women just outside the gates. And I like to say men are holding the keys to the leadership locker room doors. Women are ready to lead. And it's going to take, as I said, women of courage to step up and say, I can do that. I want it. Let me have that job to go after it, and men to say, we need women here. We're missing something important.
We still haven't gotten past the big deal part of this, though, have we? I mean,
where
it's
a
big deal to put a woman in a position of power. Mm-hmm. GM has its first CEO who is a woman.
That's gigantic.
For 7 weeks now.
Mary Barra.
Yeah, and yet it's still remarked upon because it's the first woman CEO there. When Marissa Mayer took over at Yahoo, you know, and then, of course, she wanted to bring all the people back to the office while she's busy going out on maternity leave soon after her appointment. It's still remarked upon because she's a woman.
Right, right. Well, that's where we are because there's this perception in this country that, hey, it's all done. You know, women are leading, it's all done. But the reality is, no, women are in the workforce, we're half of the workforce, we're highly educated, we're professionally seasoned. But when it comes to leadership, men still hold over 80% of the leadership roles in every arena, from governing to large corporations. Anywhere you want to look, men still hold the major leadership roles. And so you want to say, why does this matter? Why does it matter? Because we know that when you don't even change the conversation until you get to 33% representation of a minority group. So there's a saying, you know, we have our woman. Well, one is a token, two is a presence, three is a voice. So you've got to get to 33% before you even start changing the conversation. So take the U.S. Senate, 100 men, 20 women. We're not even close to truly changing the conversation, let alone the decisions.
So, Jean Stallman, who are the people who attend the Women's Leadership Conference? I mean, where do they come from, and what kinds of positions are they in?
The conference serves Southern Oregon, so it's based actually in Medford, and we have professional women from across the region. Actually, this year we have someone coming from Vancouver, Washington, Seattle. So we have a few folks from outside the region as well that are starting to hear about it, Corvallis, et cetera. But mostly it's Southern Oregon women, professional women at each of the stages. The largest, the bulk of attendees are in the middle stage of their careers, but we have an equal representation both of young women and older, more seasoned women, a nice bell curve, essentially.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about the Leadership Conference and what will be presented there. We'll talk more with Ann Doyle as well. She's the keynote speaker at the Leadership Conference this weekend. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Those phone numbers again, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Back to talk about women in positions of leadership with you here on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange. It's our final segment here today. We're talking about women in leadership. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guests are Jean Stallman. She's the chair of the Women's Leadership Conference coming to the Rogue Valley this weekend. Ann Doyle is the keynote speaker coming from a background in broadcast journalism and the auto industry. As we pointed out, two very testosterone-laden fields in which she made some pioneering efforts as a woman. Join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about women in leadership and how they continue to move into positions of leadership. The example most recently given, the U.S. Senate has 100 members, 20 are women. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's take this call from John in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jean and Ann. John, go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for letting me talk. I do have for a long time felt that men and women should be treated equally, but they are very different, and it's those differences that have made me have a long-held wish that the political leaders of the world and the military leaders of the world were women. I think it would be a much better world. At the same time, going back to an original discussion about locker rooms, so if it was a male reporter wanting to have access to a women's locker room, it would be a different situation, perhaps. So, you know, you can conduct yourself with restraint, as I do in my professional life, but there are those feelings, and that shouldn't be ignored.
All right. Interesting point. Thanks for bringing that up, John. I hadn't even thought about that in those terms.
Well, I'd love to respond to John, and I really appreciate his point because it's a very important point. And there's two things that I would say about that. Number one is that the sports teams created a situation which was truly a work environment where it was like the 10th inning or, you know, the fifth quarter, you know, where after the game, reporters went in to talk to those players. And the players, it was their decision whether they wanted to be clothed or not. But there was a period of time when the media had access to that locker room. And when we went in, you know, they basically told the men ahead of time, there's a woman coming in. You know, the male reporters would go in, and then the guard would go in and say, Ann Doyle is coming in. You got 5 minutes. Or there's a woman coming in. So they could do really whatever they wanted. They didn't need to be, you know, undressed. And we were not in there that long. You're on deadline. You're not just hanging out
right
there.
You want to get a couple of sound bites
right
and get back.
And the other piece about that is that at that time, women were just beginning to play sports. Post-Title IX, you're really just – the women coaches were begging male reporters to come and cover their teams. And when they did, and they all said they can come in our locker room anytime they want, the women didn't get undressed. It's real simple.
It is. And it seems like it's been made even more
simple. You can make it hard or you can make it simple.
And it seems like there's a lot more in the way of the post-game news conference now, too.
That's
where they
exactly
come into
right.
a more neutral room where there aren't towels and naked behinds and the whole shebang.
That's what's happened as more women have moved into that. Right.
Jean? I think there's also a deeper question here, though, that, that John alludes to, and that's the discomfort or the uncertainty sometimes about how we relate between the sexes, given that, you know, sort of we want to help, we want to be involved, we want it to be all equal and play fair, But especially when we think about something like mentoring, how does an older man mentor a young woman and have it be okay and not have questions or anything raised? How do we support each other when there's a power difference and have it be a very positive experience? And you probably have more to say about that than anyone.
Well, I think that's exactly where we are right now. That's an incredible moment where we are in terms of cultural development. And I just interviewed a fabulous senior executive at Chevron, a man, who talks about this a lot. And he has seen what's gone on in other parts of the world, particularly over in the Nordic countries, where there's a lot of offshore rigs and men and women, more men and women working together as peers. And he said, you know what? You just have to increase the numbers. Mm-hmm. So that men and women are more used to working together, and it's not just the lone woman in a very male environment.
In seeking mentors in your own career then, I mean, obviously your father was a sports broadcaster when you moved into sports broadcasting. When you got to the auto industry, though, was there a fair amount of trial and error for you seeking out people who could act as decent mentors for you and people who just wanted no part of having a woman in the executive suite at all?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that I think is really important is that, yes, you have to seek mentors and you have to seek all different kinds of mentors, you know, men, women. Mentors can help you with sort of specific things. But what we know now is that more women are mentored than men, but more men are sponsored. And the difference between mentorship and sponsorship is about someone in a position of power to basically say, I want Jeff in that job. Here's why he should be in that job. Or I want Gene in that job. And when those conversations happen behind the scenes, how did Mary Barra get that job at General Motors? Well, she had to be incredibly qualified, which she is. But it never would not have happened if she weren't mentored by men who recognized her talent along the way. And then when it came to the big jobs, she was sponsored.
So somebody did act in that the capacity.
Oh, absolutely, including on the board of directors, including the board of directors. Now, interestingly enough, because GM went through bankruptcy, completely new board. And out of there, I believe they have 15 board members, 4 are women. You know, so you're getting to that tipping point, 33%. You're changing the conversation. You're changing the dynamics. And I know 2 of those women on that board. Hot conversation. Let's go for it.
Are the standards going to still be somewhat higher, though? I mean, it seems like
yes.
when a male, I mean, because males hold so many executive positions anyway, there's often the conversations like, well, he's kind of a screw up, but you know, he's our screw up, or you know, something along those lines. When a woman would be held to a much higher standard, she's not performing. Look at the numbers. Boom, she's out of there.
Well, it's true that because there's still so few, you know, that they're people, there's still just a little bit of, you know, and that's human nature, that if men are in the positions of power and they're sort of used to men in those jobs and people who behave like them, to go with somebody who looks a little different, thinks a little different, comes from different background, it's a leap. And that's why I say we need women of courage and men of courage and high consciousness too.
And it's about increasing the numbers.
Make
like
the
on
leap.
The North Sea oil rigs, if there's just more people in all those positions, more women in all those positions,
we'll get used to it. But it's not, we're not talking about fairness here or anything like that. We're talking about the fact that we now know that heterogeneous groups outperform homogeneous groups every single time. There's all kinds, when you're trying to solve complex problems, every single time, because you need people who think differently.
Let us take another call here. Sandy in Mount Shasta, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about women in leadership with Ann Doyle and Gene Stallman.
Yeah, hi. Boy, this is a great conversation to be having, and I hope we keep having it regularly until women are at least 50% of the people in power in our whole culture. I've worked in a lot of different fields, medicine and social services and schools and things like that, where women are highly represented, but not so much in the management end of things. And over the years, I've noticed that, unfortunately, a lot of the women who did rise to positions of management seem to have to do so by becoming 10 times as macho as their next male competitor. And I hope that is fading, because I don't think we are going to have anything like the humane society we want until women do occupy at least 50%. Again, the caveat for me is if they can do that without adopting the sort of masculine hierarchical nonsense that we've all suffered under for so long. You know, we, women can bring a different sensibility. And, yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
All right, thanks for that, Sandy. Appreciate that. He brings up an interesting point, and I've heard this before as well, the idea that women, when they really get into high positions, need to be at least as aggressive and macho as the men.
Well, and I appreciate his comment very much, and I hope we're getting past that. I really hope that we're getting to a moment and a place where we understand that men and women, we are different. I mean, we have a lot of similarities. We're all human beings and things like that. But there are some very interesting, fantastic differences between men and women, and that we balance one another, and that we bring out the best in one another, really. And so for women to try to be like men is a terrible mistake. And but also we shouldn't have to neutralize ourselves in terms of, and there's a word that I use in my book that's called womaninity. And it's a word I created because I said we need a word that's parallel to masculinity, because femininity is really about our softer side. But when you're talking about leaders and a woman being a fully evolved leader who taps into the strengths of her gender, that's about womaninity. And to bring that strength as being comfortable as a woman and not trying to be a man.
I'm thinking about almost like you have to act more like a grandmother than a mother in those positions. And I'm thinking specifically about Nancy Pelosi. Do you remember when she got attention at a news conference by saying, "That's my grandmother of five" voice? So it's somebody who can take charge, but in a way that people recognize is efficient and not getting into the motherly femininity.
We have to be not playing the sex card. I mean, you have to be, men and women have to be able to work with each other as platonic peers. We have to get to that place. And I mean, you know, the romance is a wonderful thing. But in the workplace, we have to get, and I think it really helps to have brothers and men to have sisters, you know, because that certainly helped me. And I have lots of men that I talk about who are advocates about this, talk about their sisters or talk about their moms, you know, and or their wives, of course, you know, that helps a lot.
We have an email here from Tim in Eureka. He says, we need more women in leadership positions. We need family-friendly leadership positions for women who want to mother full-time for a while. Mm. There is this implied competition for women that needs to be addressed. Jean, can you talk about that?
I can relate to that, absolutely. I'm thinking about these differences as I'm listening to the dialogue between the two of you, differences between men and women. I'm remembering in my own career, earlier on, having had five brothers, being raised to compete and be comfortable with that, to assert, be direct, all those things. Yet there was this piece of me that I think only really developed after I had that first baby. I think there's something about going to work, dressed professionally, and realize that you have a little baby throw up on your shoulder. Sort of, it humanizes you somehow. And I found like, for me, it helped me to be a better person and a better woman, to realize that, to be a better boss, by understanding the full humanity of the people that I worked with, the family challenges that they had, all that. So I think that women do bring something special to a position of guys too, when they're being a dad and having those experiences. But I think that parenting changes us, that the dialogue changes in our workplace when we are seeing each other as full human beings.
Anne Doyle, your book is Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders. And I think you mentioned interviewing something like 160 people for the book.
Yes. You know, I move through the world as a journalist. I've had a lot of different jobs. But in terms of how I move through the world, it's as a journalist. And I'm always looking for the story. You know, what's the story? And that's why it was very clear to me that the story was we're this nation of millions of high-achieving women, but leadership underachievers. And so, right, I was going to find out, what does it take? What does it take for high-achieving women to make this next cultural leap, which is to leadership in big numbers? Because I'm old enough to have lived through watching women move in big numbers into the professions that today are just so mainstream. And I saw that happen. And it happened in the 70s and it happened in the 80s in this country. And then we kind of went through a few decades of just sort of almost settling a little bit and those numbers getting bigger and bigger. But now we're ready for that next leap. And so, it you know, it's one thing to be a high achiever. It takes very different skills to be a leader.
There must be an interesting set of feelings, though, that come with looking at the world as it is today and seeing positions that women occupy now that they didn't when and we'll say this broadly, our generation, because I assume we're all baby boomers here, when we were kids. On the one hand, there's probably a sense of wistfulness. It's like, well, gee, they don't realize that women didn't used to hold these jobs. On the other hand, there might be a sense of, well, that's great. They have no idea that women never held these jobs. Mm. Do those end up in some sort of dynamic there, or is it really easy to say, hey, it's just great we're here now?
What do you think, Jean?
Oh, I'm reminded of taking my young daughter at the time with me to drop off some paperwork at the president's office on campus. And I afterwards shared the story with the president that my daughter said to me as we left the office, that was the president? I didn't know that girls could be presidents. Hmm. And this was 1999, I think. So I think that very young people have still an awareness that we're still breaking barriers more than you might think.
All right, so the conference is sold out this weekend, is that right?
We are sold out. We still sold out pretty quickly after opening, but for folks that weren't able to register, the folks that are on the wait list are still going to be connected into the conference. We're doing social media, Twitter, all that, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that. Our conference webpage, which is sou.edu/womenlead, has the links to the social media. It has the spot where one can click to register, which now puts you on a wait list. But at least that way you can be connected with what's going on and get word about next year's conference early.
Okay, we have links to that both at jeffexchange.org and on our Facebook page. I want to thank Jean Stallman, the conference chair, for joining us, and Ann Doyle, keynote speaker. Pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure to be here.
Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about Southern Oregon Historical Society developing an exhibit on the 1960s. Then we'll talk about boutique wineries in the Medford area grouping together for some functions. Then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to the master gardeners about getting gardens ready for springtime. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day. We'll